Saskatchewan. Brent Lauchs filling in. Evan Bray show today. Joined now by the chief of police for the city of Saskatoon, Chief Cam McBride. Thanks for popping in.
Glad to be here.
You're just fresh off your fall update with your staff today, I understand?
That's right. I spoke for 2 hours this morning, so my voice might be a little weak, but communication is key, so I try to stay connected.
How many members with the Saskatoon Police Force now?
Well, our authorized sworn strength is 538. Our entire complement of staff is about 780.
Well, I wanted to ask you about attrition. Are your retirement numbers causing you concern as far as finding bodies to fill those holes?
You know, there's a few things at play. Definitely, we forecast that around this time in our life cycle as an organization, we would be losing quite a few members. We had significant hiring in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. Some of those people are starting to think about what's next. And so we're looking at those numbers, and around an environment where applicant numbers are down, it certainly prevents a challenge for us, but we're actively recruiting and welcome any good qualified people to put their name forward.
What's qualified?
Well, you know, the most basic qualifications are the ability to pass our physical test, our mental abilities test, to have a grade 12 or equivalent, and we'll go from there.
Have these requirements changed at all over the years?
You know, a little bit of change, but for the most part, certainly for the last couple of decades, our testing has been static. Not a whole lot of change. I know there's research that comes and goes as we desire, you know, maybe something that's more appropriate or better. But right now, we have our provincially mandated tests, and that's what we stick with.
Why do you think you're seeing fewer people wanting to join the police force? Is this a Saskatoon matter, or is this cross-country?
We're definitely seeing it across country. And interestingly, I spoke several times with regard to the fact that Saskatoon didn't experience a decrease in numbers, at least not a decrease that would affect our ability to hire the number of people we need to hire. Mm-hmm. And this year, for the first time as we head into the winter season, our numbers are down to the point where we're really struggling. Mm-hmm. And we're looking for really, really good people. We believe in diversity. We believe in representing the community. And so anybody who might have an interest in policing, we welcome them to apply. And, you know, it's more and more challenging all the time when we consider the amount of social disorder, the number of individuals in crisis in our communities. It's a really challenging environment. And so it takes a very unique, special kind of person to want to do that work.
So how many positions would you be looking to fill this year?
Well, we're currently in a recruiting drive. We're wanting to hire 17 for the January class at the Saskatchewan Police College. And we're also looking for experienced members that might be coming from out of province, or, you know, just for family reasons or whatever may need to relocate to Saskatoon. We want them to consider Saskatoon Police as a good, viable option for them.
So I'm hearing you on the radio. I've got a grade 12 education. I, what, come to the police department and get an application form?
Yeah, you know, you can start online researching, but definitely if you come down to the Saskatoon Police Service 7 days a week, 8 a.m. till 8 p.m., you can pick up a recruiting package and start working through it. It is a very significant application process, but it's designed that way. Mm-hmm. We're looking for the best people.
What kind of pay does one start at as a member of the Saskatoon Police Department?
Oh, boy, you're putting me on the spot. You know, we have a very competitive compensation package, including benefits and retirement. And I'd hate to give you the number at risk of being totally off base, but I think we're starting somewhere in the mid to high 50s, and then it goes up from there. The interesting thing about policing in Saskatchewan is the moment we hire you, you're on the payroll. Hmm. And so we send our recruits to Regina, to the Saskatchewan Police College, for 21 weeks, and it's paid. You're not paying for anything. You're on the payroll. And that's very unique. And it really is an incentive for people who are looking for something, you know, you don't have to go to school and then hope you get a job at the end. If we hire you, you're our staff member, and we're going to build into you, and we'll pay you from day one.
So again, grade 12 education, not a university degree required.
No, I would say for the most part, the individuals that we're hiring today will have a university degree or a certificate in a justice-related field. But definitely, we hire people all the time who just have good work-related experience or who demonstrate themselves to be very stable, engaged, productive citizens within their own communities. That's what we're looking for. How can you contribute? And, you know, what do you bring as an individual?
Saskatoon Police Chief Cam McBride, our guest this half hour, The Evan Bray Show. How long have you been a member of the police?
Well, I'm just finishing up my 28th year.
And is that fairly typical for members of the Saskatoon Police Force to have a run of 20 to 30 years then?
Absolutely. You know, historically in Saskatoon, it's been very common that our sworn members will do their entire career of policing at the Saskatoon Police Service. So we've had members with 35 years very, very commonly. In fact, we've got some members who have extended their stay, and they've been in policing in Saskatoon for 40 plus years and have contributed significantly throughout that time.
Budget, of course, very much on the minds of a lot of Saskatoon. Well, any community in the province of Saskatchewan that time of the year when they're looking at property tax increases. And I know the Saskatoon police budget, a significant part of the city of Saskatoon budget. What do you say to residents when they look at I know City Hall right now are talking about a potential property tax increase of over 8%. I'm sure they'll get that whittled down somewhat. But when the police are such a big part of the city budget, what do you tell citizens when they look at an increase?
You know, I've been really listening carefully to what the citizens of Saskatoon are hearing. In fact, last week I had the opportunity to hear from a large number of Saskatoon business people. And what I'm hearing is a desire for a safer community, not only feeling safe, but being safe. And when I look at the environment within Saskatoon, crime numbers are going up, but Saskatoon's a growing city. And it's, in many respects, growing faster than I think anybody could have anticipated maybe 15, 20 years ago. And so we have to keep up. And when we look at police per population over the last several years, we've been in a decline. We've actually been learning how to do things more efficiently with less. But we're at a point in time right now where we simply need to grow the organization. We need to be responsive to what the citizens of Saskatoon are telling us. And I think we're presenting a necessary but responsible budget to the council.
I was mentioning to you off air that I live in one of the newer neighborhoods here in Saskatoon, and I see our community Facebook group and people talking about break-ins to their vehicles, thefts from their garage, from their front of their house, more brazen crimes, I guess you could say, property crimes, that sort of thing. What do you say to people who feel, well, there's no point in even phoning the police when somebody smashes the window in my car or grabs my bike off my front lawn?
You know, I certainly understand that. I hear the frustration in people's voices. And I know that there are many times where the public phone in or they report crime with an expectation that something will happen. And sometimes what we provide does not meet their expectations. So within that realm, you know, we're certainly looking to grow our organization so we have the ability to be spread more equally and more thoroughly across the city of Saskatoon. We're also, you know, looking at alternatives for better reporting mechanisms. Nobody wants to spend a couple of hours waiting in our lobby to report crime. And so online reporting, telephone reporting that is easy and that is user-friendly is a goal of ours in the near future. And really at the end of the day, I hear a lot about reporting and lack of reporting, but so much of policing is a response to what we hear. Mm-hmm. And if we don't hear, we don't know how to respond. And we might be responding in a way that's not reflective of the actual crime picture in the city. So the more people report, I think the better we can approach it.
You need the data, really, is what it's all about, isn't it? That I may not have a police car pull up in front of my house when I post online and do an online report about some theft, but it does help you with that information overall as to what's going on in different neighborhoods and how you may be potentially able to deal with some of those situations.
Absolutely. And, you know, one report may not lead to very much, but several reports might lead to the identification of a crime trend or a prolific offender who's out and about. And so having the ability to gather information and, you know, develop a full understanding of who's active in the community, who's committing crime, and where it's happening. Some of our biggest crime trends have been solved simply by looking at what the community is telling us. They're directing us. They're providing those critical pieces of information. And, you know, I think the community has such a significant involvement when it comes to safety. We're only one element of community safety, and we desire to work with the citizens of Saskatoon.
I know you spoke for 2 hours to your staff this morning, and you brought your tea in with you here. Can you hang in for a few more minutes here?
I'm good to go.
All right. We'll let you take a quick break here. Saskatoon's Police Chief Cam McBride. We'll be back with more of the Evan Bray Show in just a couple of minutes on CKOM and CJME. Welcome back. On the Evan Bray Show, Brent Lauk's filling in today. I'm joined by Saskatoon Police Chief Cam McBride. We were talking earlier, Chief, about starting salary for the police, and you threw out kind of a thought, an average of around $50,000 a year. And one of our listeners, Kelly, says, did I hear that right? That's why you might be having trouble finding new police officers with the kind of situations they have to deal with. Kelly says a car salesman can make double that in a good year. Okay, that's the starting salary, but they ramp up pretty quickly, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Well, we've got a class system. So, you know, the figure that I suggested was when they are hired and they go to college.
Right.
That is absolutely the base. But then by the time they're done their fourth year, entering their fifth year, first class constable. So, you know, the average police officer you see in a marked police car, they're making about 120.
Plus benefits.
Plus benefits, plus pension.
Yeah.
Plus in this environment, plus some overtime.
Oh, I suppose.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. I was asking you on our break about the police plane. So the people that are crewing the police plane that we see over the city of Saskatoon, do you hire a pilot to become a policeman, or do you have a policeman that you have then become a pilot?
Good question. So the airplane always has two members in it.
Yeah.
In the back is a constable. We call him a tactical flight officer. And they compete for that position. And sometimes there's a lot of competition to have that role. And then the pilot is a member as well, also a sworn member, who we identify. Ideally, they already have their private pilot's license. And then we'll pay for them to get their commercial designation. And we'll get them all the ratings that they need to be our pilot.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And how long has that plane been in service? I remember when it came online, I took an early flight, and that's quite a few years ago.
It is quite a few years ago for sure. I don't know the exact year that it started, yeah. But, you know, the benefits that we've seen from that program have been absolutely amazing, really.
Okay, let's talk numbers. Crime, property crime, violent crime. What are you seeing in the fall of 2025 here?
You know, this year started with violent crime being up significantly and property crime being down significantly based on comparison to 2024. Right now, I just got our October stats actually this morning, and we're sitting at about 2.8% increase in violent crime over 2024. So we're trending in the right direction for sure. And then reported property crime, we're still significantly under reported crime from 2024. And I hear all the time the argument that, well, we're not reporting, so it doesn't accurately reflect what's happening in the community. But again, you know, so much of our operations is based on reported crime. So reported crime within the nonviolent categories are down.
You'd mentioned earlier you were part of the process, I believe it was with the mayor, was it a week or so ago, where business leaders got together and expressed their concerns about some of the problems they were seeing in our community. And everybody knows we're talking, especially the downtown, but all neighborhoods really have their problems and their issues these days. From the police point of view, do you find you're having to spend a lot of time on things that, you know, you'd rather not, and that is a lot of the social ills and homeless problems that we've got out there?
Absolutely. You know, I describe it as an outward manifestation of a very deep issue, deep complex issue in many cases. And so we have people in the community who are, you know, experiencing homelessness, experiencing mental health challenges or addictions. And that results in some behavioral issues, whether it be theft, whether it be disturbances. And the police are often the ones called. We may not be the very best to deal with a mental health challenge in the community, but certainly we're available 24/7, 24 hours a day, and we're the ones, we're the go-to, we're at the other end of the 911 call.
Yeah.
And so we're constantly learning to deal with them better, and how we can engage other areas, other organizations to help us with those types of calls.
Are you still providing a social worker that will go out on some of those mental health calls? I think I saw something recently, there'd been a change in that.
We're still operating four PACT teams, so police and crisis teams, a police officer with a social worker, and they're part of our frontline response. And we've also augmented that approach. We've got our intimate partner violence response team up and running, and that too is a police officer with a social worker. Just making sure we have the capacity and the ability to meet people where they're at and provide the best response we possibly can.
I appreciate you coming in today, Chief. I know you've got a busy day. Tomorrow, Remembrance Day services, police involved very much in that?
We will have a good representation up at Sask Place for the large citywide Remembrance Day ceremony. And it's absolutely amazing. And I would recommend every citizen of Saskatoon who can to head out there and to remember those who dedicated their lives so that we could have a better life.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for giving us some time here today. Appreciate you coming in.
You bet. Glad to be here.
Saskatoon Police Chief Cam McBride, just an update on some of the issues and the numbers that we deal with in our city here. And we appreciate his popping by the Evan Bray Show. Brent Laux, I'm with you up until 12:30 today. We've got news on the way. The Evan Bray Show continues on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Good week ahead of us right across Saskatchewan. Morning. Brent Laux filling in today on the Evan Bray Show. Above normal temperatures. We're talking all week long. And even for Winnipeg for Grey Cup Sunday, Winnipeg's forecast right now calling for a mix of sun and cloud on Sunday and a high of plus one for those folks making the trip down to the Manitoba capital to see our Riders come home with the Grey Cup. My next guest is involved in research, finding ways to better treat scoliosis. And some of that research involved use of the synchrotron here in Saskatoon at the University of Saskatchewan. Dr. Brian Saruna is the researcher and scientist involved in this. He's with the Sick Kids Hospital at the University of Toronto, and he joins us now. Good morning, Dr. Saruna.
Good morning.
Let's start off with scoliosis. For those that aren't familiar with it, what is that?
Simply, it's a abnormal curvature of the spine. It can result from a number of factors. There can be congenital defects. Maybe the bones of the spine don't develop properly. It can arise because of neuromuscular defects. But for 80% of all human spine deformities, scoliosis actually forms for really unknown reasons. It's called idiopathic scoliosis. It happens in otherwise healthy individuals. The spine will begin to bend, usually during puberty in children, during periods of rapid growth, and it can continue to bend. And we really don't have a good idea as to why that happens.
Gosh, it's funny you mentioned that. Like, I remember as a kid, I had a friend, and he used to wear this brace. He didn't wear it all the time, but it was a fairly significant piece of hardware that he had to wear. So when a person is diagnosed with scoliosis, is it something that they will eventually grow out of, or does it stay with them permanently?
It depends on the individual. Right now, it's very common. 3 to 4% of all children worldwide will develop scoliosis. It could be as maybe as small as a 10-degree curvature in the spine. And maybe that's it. But in maybe 1 in 10 cases, that curvature will continue to progress until it requires bracing. Or in very severe cases, the surgeons will undergo corrective surgery. They'll insert metal rods and screws into the spine to try to physically correct that curvature.
So let's talk now about some of the research you're doing. You're looking for ways to better treat scoliosis, and you have found a surprising assistance, I guess, in this zebra fish. What in the world is this research doing that involves these small fish?
So zebrafish, maybe we could start there. So it's a very popular organism to use in biomedical research. They're very simple to use. They have about 80% of all disease-causing genes are conserved in the fish. They have organ systems like livers, kidneys, spines, brains, immune systems, just like humans do. And we use them to actually model a lot of different disease states in the lab. We discovered about a decade ago when we were making mutations, trying to disrupt various biological processes in the fish, that some of our fish started to get very severe curvatures of the spine, and we became interested, could we use these models to better understand the human spine?
Interesting. So you didn't really begin this thinking scoliosis. You kind of defaulted into it because of what the fish was doing?
That's true. We were interested in different more fundamental biological properties of cell polarity, how cells know up from down, left from right, various organelle structures called cilia. But we had this very strange phenotype, so we just decided that we needed to know more.
That's fascinating. And so how does that then play into the synchrotron here in Saskatoon?
Well, the synchrotron's a fantastic facility. It really allowed us to do some very high-resolution imaging of what was going on in the spine of these fish. We were able to make three-dimensional data sets that we could then section in various ways, and we could actually see what was going on to the bones and to the soft tissues around the spine. And it showed us that in our fish models, very similar to humans, that the intervertebral discs were being deformed, and we believe that that was what was causing scoliosis in these fish.
So what will this research hopefully bring us to?
Well, what we found is really we've been looking at what the root cause is, why the intervertebral discs were deforming. And what we found is that it had to do with redox imbalance, that our fish were getting oxidative stress, elevated oxidative states along the spine, that was causing defects in the production or the remodeling of the collagen extracellular matrix. So it was affecting the tissue itself, which was causing the deformations we were seeing in the spine. And we were able to demonstrate that treatments with simple antioxidants could actually reverse those effects.
Really?
We could actually prevent scoliosis, or we could prevent severe scoliosis progression in our models.
Is there anything genetic about scoliosis? Is it something that one family member has, and so there's an opportunity or a possibility then that a child may be more predisposed to it?
There definitely is a genetic contribution. Human geneticists have done studies to try to understand what those genetic causes are, but it seems to be very more complex than we would expect. Mm-hmm. I think less than 5% of all human scoliosis can be attributed to a genetic defect at this point, but it does run in families, and there's also an environmental contribution as well.
But do you think we could come to the day where basically a pill might be the answer here?
If we're able to translate our zebrafish studies to the clinic, then yes, we've demonstrated that, you know, the therapeutic treatment with antioxidants can affect, can improve the zebrafish well-being. We're now doing studies here at Hospital for Sick Children to see whether or not some of the findings we found in zebrafish also apply to the patient population. And if they do, then antioxidants may in fact be useful. But there's still a lot of work to do before we can make that conclusion.
That's fascinating research. I appreciate you sharing us that information with us today. And good luck and continued success with that.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Dr. Brian Saroon, a researcher scientist at the Sick Children's Hospital, University of Toronto, and talking about how they've been able to, you know, study what's going on with scoliosis developing in kids and teenagers based on the similarities that they see in these zebrafish. Wouldn't that be something if they could get to that point where, you know, if you start to develop that or as a preventative, you'd be able to take a pill? That's what we wish for. Good morning. It's Brent Laux with you. Filling in today, Evan Bray Show continues in just a few minutes here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Touched by Brian Adams, Remembrance Day, which is tomorrow. Brent Laux filling in today on the Evan Bray Show. Happy to spend some time now with Reed Hill. Reed is president of the Royal Canadian Legion Branch Number 1 in Regina, and we're here to talk Remembrance Day, of course. Hi, Reed. Welcome.
Well, good morning.
So, 80th anniversary of the end of the Second World War this year. How significant is that in relation to our Remembrance Day tomorrow?
It's significant as we're slowly losing the last of our World War II vets. So that's pretty much how significant it is. It's like this may be one of the last few years where we get to remember and maybe have a conversation with somebody who served in that war.
Are you seeing more and more families, though, maybe stepping up? And I know there's been a drive over the past number of years for the Legion to encourage more and more people to sign up to be members. Is that all helping in this process?
It's helping a lot. We have seen membership uptake a little bit more in the last few years than prior. And we always remind people, anybody can be a Legion member. They don't have to have served in the RCMP or the military. And they can be family members. They can just be, maybe they know somebody that was in the military. So it's a very open organization for that.
So how's the Poppy campaign been going for the Legion this fall?
Very good. And don't ask me the locations, because there's over 600 of them in Regina alone. So,
oh, that's awesome.
No, I can't name every single one, but you know, you can find them in Walmarts and Costco, pretty much across the city.
Well, in a lot of places too have the little tap box on them as well. So nowadays, a lot of people maybe don't carry their loose change, and that certainly helps you as far as your fundraising.
Oh yeah, like the tap boxes have been a great add to our campaign, and I think I can never remember which bank helped us out on that, but I thank them for it, and it really goes a long way, because who carries change anymore?
Yeah, isn't that the truth?
Reed, that isn't me.
Reed Hill is Royal Canadian Legion Branch Number 1 president. I'm just curious, when it's Branch Number 1, what's the history on that Legion branch?
So our branch was incorporated in October 1926. Which is the same year the Legion was created in 1926. So we get to be number one. It's kind of a handy thing, but it also means that when we go to celebrate the 100th anniversary, it's a little bit more important to us too, where we're also celebrating our own 100th anniversary. So I get to make it a big party next year.
We've got a guest coming up before 12:30 to talk about the Remembrance Day services that'll be happening in Saskatoon. What can people in Regina remember and take part in tomorrow, Reed?
So there's always our two services. So our one service that happens down the branch center, which is more of a viewership one, where you're sitting in the crowd and watching, you know, the military cadets and RCMP officers and police officers parade on as part of that major ceremony. But then there's also one happening down at the Cenotaph. It's a little bit more, you know, a little bit closer, a little bit more, you know, hands-on. And those that have purchased wreaths and wish to lay a wreath at the Cenotaph, they can do so at that time. Always recommend getting there a little bit early, especially to the Brandt Center one, because parking is a premium, and we all know that.
Yeah. Tell me about the Legion's Military Service Recognition Book. I hadn't heard of this before. What is going on with that?
Okay, so that book has been around for a long time, probably more than a decade. So what you're seeing from that online one is the living document version that we just started this year. So it used to be we had to print it every single year, and only a certain number of people could get in the book every year. The one you see online is a living document that we can just continue to add new names to it. And anybody in Saskatchewan, or if they're in different provinces across the country, can add to the book. It's run by donations and advertising that keep it going, and it's a remembrance of those that have served in any branch of the Armed Forces and RCMP over the course of the years. And we always want younger people who have served, if they want to put their name forward and have a little blurb about themselves to go into the book, we always welcome that. And families have put it forward as well.
You know, my recollection, I remember working in Regina years ago and going to the Legion on Remembrance Day and being part of that gathering and the families and the veterans that were there at that time. And this is many years ago, but I was just struck by that camaraderie and that wonderful feeling of all these families being there to support the veterans. Do you find at least the family side of that continues to be strong and to grow? And maybe, as you say, the veterans themselves aren't with us anymore, but families are kind of picking up the banner and carrying it in their memory?
Yeah, families tend to do that, and we always see if a veteran passes on from many years of service, the family does usually tend to take it on, whether it's a grandchild or a child that continues on their memory or steps up to the branch and stands as part of that to make sure that their memory is heard. Or they donate a piece of an article to the museum if they so want to, so that it's on display, so that people, when they do go down to our museum, can see their family's remembrance.
And it's quite fascinating nowadays. I think of Ancestry.com, a lot of the genealogy sites that you can go to. But there is so much information available online nowadays where you can track down, family members with military records and census. There's so much available out there, and I think a lot of people are interested in chasing those stories.
Yeah, and we're one of the ways that you can do that, too. Some of our documents that go down to our Dominion Command, has a lot of that information. If they were a member of the Legion, if they were a veteran, same thing, because we have connections with Veterans Affairs and the other branches of the government that link to veterancy and military personnel so that we can help, affirm that someone's a veteran and check into their history and find their service record if someone wants their service record.
Mm-hmm. Is there information available through the Legion, or maybe you'd know of some other source? Because I know of people who have, when a loved one has passed and they're going through their belongings and they find medals, say, from the First War or the Second War, and they really don't know the history on that. Are there ways that they can track down what awards were perhaps given to a loved one?
Yeah, the Legion can do that. The Legion can do that, and so can Veterans Affairs. Because Veterans Affairs will probably have those records. Won't be easy to find, but they should have those records on what those medals are and what they mean and how they got them. Not always easy to get those records, but once we find their service records, we can kind of give them a quick blurb of, okay, this is who they are, this is where they served, this is where they got that medal.
Excellent. I appreciate the information, Reed. Yeah. Reed Hill, Royal Canadian Legion Branch 1 President. What's your story, Reed, as far as the military service?
I served 3 years in the reserves in the Royal Regina Rifles, but my family served. So my aunt and uncle served a long time in the military. My uncle served in Cyprus and in Germany, and my aunt served in Germany. So that's kind of where I come from.
Well, thank you for your service and your family as well. And thanks for being such a strong member with the Royal Canadian Legion Branch 1 President. Yeah. And we appreciate your time here today.
And thank you.
Take care, Reed Hill, as we head towards Remembrance Day. And as I mentioned, for Saskatoon and area listeners, we've got a guest coming up just before 12:30 today to talk about the program that'll be on tomorrow out at SaskTel Center in Saskatoon. It's just about noon hour, isn't it? Evan Bray Show continues. I'm here, Brent Laux, filling in until 12:30 here this morning. And so much going on and so many great texts that people are coming in on at 1-877-332-8255. I'm sorry I can't have that information. Ian was asking about getting information on a vet. Don't have that for you here. 1-877-332-8255. Cam says he'd like to see the government really step up in the media at this time of the year and stress the importance of the poppy and its meaning. The younger generations, newcomers, and so many of us who treat November 11th like it's just a day off to be enjoyed need to be re-educated about just how important this day is. I want to see everybody wearing a poppy. Cameron, I think that's a valid comment that you make, and let's hope that in family situations and in schools that they are getting that message. With Remembrance Day happening across Canada tomorrow, make sure you got the poppy on. And just as a side note, I know it's just me, first world problems. I lost a lot of poppies this year. They've been out now for a couple of weeks, and I don't know what it is. I think it's the material in my coat tends to be a little slick, and I find myself always scrambling to find another poppy. But the more poppies, the better. And of course, nowadays too, you can go to the Legion website, and there are so many different poppy products. You know, I can remember as a kid, you had the choice of the small poppy that we still have today that you'd pin on. Remember the big suction cut poppies as well? You know, they were a larger poppy about the size of your hand, and in the middle of it, that big black circle was actually a suction cup. And people would stick it in their car windows, back window, rear window. Okay, front window too, sure. New news on the way here. I still got a half hour to go. Bear with me. Brent Laux filling in today. The Evan Bray Show on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.